Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell. I'm here in the pleasant Bay Area where I live in my own house and sleep in my own bed across the internet from me. It's Tim Goodman. He continues to be in residence after 2 weeks at the Beverly Hilton for the Television Critic Association summer press tour. You're still alive, Tim. You're still alive. You still got your life. You still got your health.
Well, a little dubious on the still have your health part.
Okay, a lot of Diet Coke keeping you alive.
Oh, yeah. This is, let's see here, day 16 of the press tour, day 18 in the hotel. Yeah. I think being in a hotel for 18 days, and I'll be here tomorrow for 19, and flying out on the 20th day, that's too long.
Does that make you question your life?
Oh, my God. It makes me question everything. And certainly at the end, I'm like, okay, who cares about this crappy show? Let's go. Move on.
Alan Sepinwall dropped in for 4 days and then vanished again. I thought that was not fair, really.
I have not. I'm about to send him at some time, probably after this. I'll send him a message like, I didn't even know he'd left. So, yes.
He's
maybe I
there.
Have to rethink how I cover the press tour.
You're close, too. You could pop in for a while, go home for a while, pop back in. I don't know.
Technically, that's probably true. They do mix things up a little bit crazy. If I were to look back at the schedule, I'm not sure where I would. I mean, right. There would be times when you could get out, but the turnaround might be more pain than it's worth. And I do end up having, I think I cover this differently than a lot of, I know different than Alan does, and probably different than a lot of people in that in the times when it looks like there's downtime, I'm actually meeting with other executives.
Right. And you're watching some stuff, too, even while you're down there. So.
Yes, I'm reviewing down there. In fact, I will be reviewing Narcos on Netflix today and writing it today. So it's a lot of quick turnaround on a number of these shows. In fact, I've been here so long, Jason. This is just to put it in TV terms. I was here when Netflix didn't know if they were going to renew Sense8, and then they renewed it.
And they renewed it.
While I was here.
Yeah. They could have done that, on stage, and instead they waited and had
that's
the awkward...
Crazy.
Yeah. That was so long ago that we covered that in our last episode. That's how long ago it's been.
Which was
July 31st. So yeah, a long time ago. Long time ago. Technically, we missed last week. Which would end the streak. And it's my fault because I was traveling and couldn't get anywhere near an internet connection to talk.
It was probably more my fault.
No, it was just bad. It was bad circumstance of you being very busy with this thing and then me having no flexibility because I was in a car in rural, Oregon.
I know, but you had a vacation. That's lovely.
That's true.
People should not have to podcast.
It was lovely.
I
will say it was lovely. Although I after whatever 10 straight night or 9 straight nights staying in hotel rooms, different hotel rooms, I began to question my life. And I was on vacation with my family. You're just a man alone in a hotel room.
Yeah, there has been some very hilarious. Like I was loading boxes to be shipped back home, pushing. This is what I was doing. I was pushing them through the hallways in. There was a chair, like a desk chair. I had stacked them three high in a desk chair. I pushed the desk chair out into the hallway, pushed it down way long, got into the elevator, dropped down to another floor, pushing it down that hallway, and another person came out the door and looked at me like I was absolutely insane. And I'm like, yep, just another day in TV tour.
Wow. So what? You're gonna have to cast your mind back because we've talked. It's been so long since we talked. You have it just information overload. And session overload. You got many more cable networks and some of the big broadcast networks. When we last left you, you had only really talked about Comedy Central and Netflix, HBO, Nat Geo, BBC America. That's sort of all we covered in the last episode. So it's like everything else has come out since.
Wow,
everything.
And that is crazy. And here, and this is actually a moment where I can have clarity, where I can. I can offer the TCA website some advice in the future. It's like, for everybody who's down here, we have this long schedule of TCA events. But once somebody's come in and out, they kind of take away the schedule and they change it and they delete it, which really when you're brain addled like I am, it kind of messes up. It would be nice to be able to go back and say, oh, right. I remember when, HBO was here and what day that was, and FX and what day that was. Mm-hmm. So they have the transcripts from the press sessions in alphabetical order. So we could do a couple things. I could scroll down and tell you some things that stood out, or you could ask, let's do that.
I think there's too much to do this any other way. So if you can pick out some of the highlights, I think that's going to be the best thing at this point.
Okay, our listeners can bear with us knowing, A, that I've been in the hotel an ungodly amount of time. I am brain dead. I'm being fueled on Diet Coke and candy. I lost my way to the gym about 7 days ago, so that part's out. The health part's out. But we're in the home stretch, Jason, and I think that there are some things that I'll go through here, and I'll just mention a few. ABC didn't really have anything that stood out other than the Muppets, which I think is going to be a big deal. The Muppets were here on stage, which was weird, interviewing them in character. Hi, question for
Kermit the Frog.
Kermit in the back. No, over here. And literally this happened, Jason. It happened. No, back to your right. To your right. I'm like, it's a frog.
It's a puppet. Frog. It's not even a frog. It's a puppet frog.
It's a puppet frog. He can't even see where you are.
No.
Stop telling him where you are. So ABC as a... That's the way we should do this. We just go by entities. ABC, when they were here, they really don't have much buzz and other than Muppets. There was a show called Quantico. People might have seen that trailer. I think Quantico is going to fall into the category of like the Blacklist, like something you might watch for entertainment purposes because it's the only other show on ABC outside of the Muppets that even had a little slight buzz, and that's because half the room doesn't like it, half the room likes it. So it's interesting how it's sort of divided it that way. So that's it for them. When we get to Amazon, they had a really interesting session here, Jason. And remind me if we've covered something. Or we haven't covered them
yet. Amazon. Okay. Nope.
So they had a lot going for them, just like Netflix. I know we covered Netflix, but just like them, they have a different working model, right? So their shows that are on the air, they consider worthy of bringing them out here, whereas most networks and cable, they don't really panel a session if it's already on the air. They tend to do it for things that have not aired yet. So it went really well. I would say that Mozart in the Jungle is a series I liked. I binged already. It's available for the first season on there. You can go right through it. They were here via satellite for their second season. That was very good. I think Red Oaks, the comedy, will be great. The pilot is up on Amazon. You can watch that. The one that really got when the Transparent cast was here, the Transparent.
Oh, yeah.
That was good. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe that's only season two. Like, we've been talking about Transparent for so long now.
Yeah.
And that's based on one season.
Right. And it's not even out yet. And the thing is, they did show us a trailer for it, and that trailer did create buzz. But the thing, and here's the weird part too, it's all how time and space merges and people are overwhelmed, sensory overload, is that even though on Amazon right now you can actually go there if you have Amazon Prime and you can watch The Man in the High Castle, that it's been up for a while, but that pilot has generated a ton of buzz. And I think that it looks beautiful, and I think that's going to be a hit for them. Clearly, they've gone forward with the season. So that's the other one that was generating some buzz.
I loved it. I saw that pilot when they premiered it, in the spring, and I thought, well, this is a winner. I thought it had some really fantastic moments in it, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, and did we talk about AMC?
No, we did not.
Oh, didn't do that. Okay. So two actually pretty good things about that. Fear of the Walking Dead, which is about to start soon. My review of that is already up on THR.com, and I'm sure we can probably link to it in the show notes. I think there's a lot of potential there. The first two episodes that they showed to the press were really slow, which is kind of problematic. But the premise is great, knowing that we know more than the cast does. The characters do. I find that interesting dramatically, knowing that that thing that is walking towards you, which you don't yet know is an infected person who will turn into a zombie, you might want to get away from that.
Well, it's like the original show and the comic was like this too. Skip over telling the story of the beginning of a zombie apocalypse because they figured like you've seen that and it's also really expensive to do on TV. We'll just move on. Rick wakes up. The apocalypse has already happened and he's got to figure it out. Well, now the show's so successful that it's kind of brilliant, right? It's like, well, we'll just do a show that does show that. That does show the slow grinding zombie apocalypse. And they've said, I mean, it's not going to just suddenly become another Walking Dead. Like, they're going to take their time in showing the world falling apart, right?
Yes. In fact, the first season is only 6 episodes starting later this month, and they will not – there's no reveal about how it was. And I think it's going to take a long time if they ever tell us what the cause of it is.
Sure.
But it's a tricky road for them to go down, and I know there's a lot of fans of The Walking Dead, and I am a huge fan of The Walking Dead. It's a tricky road to go down because in that series, there's kind of a lot more action, and in this one, it's like a normal drama because people are just realizing. And there's some very creative things, like, you know, you'll see news reports of cops shooting homeless people, and then but you don't know yet that that's actually not a homeless person. That's like a person who's turned into what will be a zombie. So there's a lot of creative stuff where what would it be like if you didn't know and you were on the precipice of your whole world turning upside down, yet there was no precedent, no anything to it. So I think that part was creative, but the show moves a little slow. I want to see what happens in the in the future episode. What AMC did get out of this press tour, I think, they brought in Into the Badlands. And I just loved it. I think it's going to be one of those like mixed genre. It's like it's total martial arts meets dystopian future meets clans in the nether world kind of. I mean, it takes place in our world, but there's all these different rules. Like modern cars don't work, but old cars from the 70s do because you can't have any computer software on it. And it's just one of those things where it's a really violent, bloody, action-packed martial arts show, and I think it's going to be one of those things you just turn it on, and your brain goes off, and you're totally, you know, visually entertained and stylized violence in a way that I think if you like that kind of stuff, which I do, I think it'll be really entertaining without having to think a lot.
All right.
Let's see here. BBC, I think you already mentioned them.
We covered them.
Yeah.
We covered CBS. Them. Lollipop Man. We learned what a Lollipop Man was.
We did. That was very funny. that was too funny. CBS was here, and, you know, I have to say that they don't really have that much buzz.
You have to see Stephen Colbert.
Right. So the two highlights were Supergirl, which is interesting. I do say that you and I have talked about this before. People will find it because they will find a genre show. But this is definitely a CW series.
Yeah, weird.
It would fit so much better on the sister channel, but you know, I know why they grabbed it. They want a slice of the young adult audience. They want the genre. Colbert was here, who was magnificently funny, Jason. It was so, so good. And it just left no doubt that this guy is, you know, we already knew it anyway, but the guy doesn't miss a beat. He's razor sharp. He's funny. And this whole what is he like without his mask on? Well, it's pretty obvious. He's just himself. And I think that's gonna be a great show to watch. I think that he did wonders for himself to come out here. Even though I think the curiosity factor was already there, people will tune in. Let's see here. Let's go down the list here. I skipped over DirecTV because they had Kingdom. Yeah, I'm not interested in that. Let's see here. Oh, Fox, another big broadcast network was here, and they have a couple of things at work. The Grinder is a comedy with Rob Lowe that I think is going to work. It'll be a hit. It'll be a very funny sitcom. They have another series called Grandfathered with John Stamos, which they're going to be probably partnered near each other. And that panel worked. The show didn't have much buzz, but then the panel came and you could kind of see how the writers worked and how funny the cast was. And then, okay, not a big fan of the premise, which is that John Stamos, not on the same day that he finds out he's a father, he finds out he's actually a grandfather. And I was like, not so much on the premise, but the people were good. It's, you know, it's mildly entertaining. But the other one, The Grinder, was with Rob Lowe as coming from a family of lawyers, but he's a lawyer. He's a TV star who did, he went to law school but wasn't any good, and then he became a lawyer on TV, and he was great. And now he just can't put that. Now that the show's ended, he can't put that away. The other people in his family who are lawyers are all annoyed that he gets all the attention. So that was very funny. I think Scream Queens for certain reasons. That's the new series. You've probably seen highlights of it already. Yeah. And I think that's probably going to get some attention, but I'm not in that horror camp stuff.
That struck me as being like American Horror Story light.
Sure.
Sort of.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's from the same person.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Murphy, right?
Uh-huh.
Not our cup of tea, I think, either of us.
No, and I think we're going to skip that.
This week's TV Talk Machine sponsor is Casper Mattresses, obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/TV Talk and using code TV Talk, all one word. Listen, you spend about a third of your life sleeping. Make sure you're doing it on a good mattress. Tim is sleeping on a hotel mattress. I am sleeping on a Casper mattress. Casper brings two comfy technologies together for better nights and brighter days, latex foam and memory foam. So the Casper mattresses have just the right sink and just the right bounce, no matter how you sleep. And listen to this. They've got a risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver it straight to you. You can try it for up to 100 days. And if you're not happy, they will take it away for free. A mattress store, maybe you'll get a minute to lean on a mattress and be like, yeah, this one's squishy and this one's a little bit harder. With Casper, you can actually sleep on the mattress. You'll sleep on it. $500 for a twin, $950 for a king. The other sizes are in between those price ranges. Compare that to industry averages. It's an outstanding price point. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/TV Talk and using code TV Talk. Terms and conditions apply. Thank you to Casper for sponsoring TV Talk Machine.
The one that did stick out at Fox as a fail, and I hope they fix it, but you know, I was hoping that Minority Report would be a good series once it started. You know, it took the movie, the Tom Cruise movie, and they turned it into a series. But it's one of those behind the scenes things where you just know there's a lot of trouble. They were only able to deliver to us an unfinished short version of what will be the pilot, and they didn't do a very good job while they were here of explaining the concept of the series, which is, I would have to say, that's the reason you're here. So that's kind of a fail.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad sign.
Mm-hmm. So FX was here. Of course, Fargo, I've already seen the pilot or the first episode of the second season. It's magnificent. It's probably the one series I'm most looking forward to coming up. It's just so, so good. They had a great time when they were here because they were here for The Strain. The Strain is getting great. It was renewed. It's getting great ratings this year. It was very exciting. They were here for You're the Worst, one of their comedies that I've turned around on. I didn't like at the beginning. And probably most interesting outside of Fargo, they were here with The Bastard Executioner. Of course, I made tons of Bastard Machine jokes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But they were here for The Bastard Executioner, and you know, that's Kurt Sutter, who did Sons of Anarchy. It'll be interesting to see if that audience from the biker gang comes back to this sort of medieval swords and kings and castles epic that is filmed in Wales. So we couldn't get any more worse. I mean, any different than its last the last show. So we'll see if the audience follows.
Leather, probably in common. That's about it. Leather accoutrements.
Savvy, very savvy on your part. HBO was here, and I have to say it was not one of their greatest places. Their summer fair is
We did light. HBO.
Did we? Okay,
we did.
Good.
That was so long ago that we did it already.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Just skip right over that.
Okay, so Hulu was here.
Ah.
And Hulu, I think that there's going to be some interesting stuff. They've got a new original series coming up called Casual that looks really interesting. We didn't get to see a completed pilot or anything like that, but they brought a panel. I think that they're doing some interesting things. Difficult People is already out right now. It's been pretty positively reviewed. It's great. If people haven't watched that yet, they might want to check that out. Billy Eichner. That one is pretty strong. Mindy Project was here. They were talking about how it's coming back. They needed her to be here, even though I think that that audience is not going to grow. I think it's just going to be Mindy audience from Fox moves to Mindy audience to Hulu. They're just happy that the series has been saved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the Community story last year, I guess.
Yeah, and I, you know, there wasn't much to say with that. Although I will, the thing that I will say as far as looking at it from an industry perspective, I think Hulu is something definitely to keep an eye on. They are an interesting media company in that, of course, they are owned by multiple different media companies, and they're showing the shows of other networks. But then they also were able to get themselves into an agreement where you can, you know, you can watch Showtime by cutting the cord. You don't have to subscribe to Showtime to see its shows. You can actually subscribe to it via Hulu. I think that's kind of an interesting hybrid of how we're, you know, over-the-top services and cutting the cords all coming together.
I think there were rumors that they were investigating a more Netflix and Amazon-like approach where you'd be able to pay for a tier where the commercials go away and it's like that kind of pure direct thing as opposed to the hybrid where they want you to pay for using their app, but they still show you ads. That there's some talk that they may be looking at, I don't know, Netflix with a little bit of envy because they can't quite be that right now because they've got this ad-supported side of the business. I don't know.
And I think if they get there, they didn't talk to much about that when they were here. We were hoping that they would expand on that. I think viewers want them to get there. I think this old concept of stopping a show, you know, in the middle or different parts for these commercials is just annoying. I think people would rather pay a fee and not have any ads. And for me, if I feel like I'm subscribing already and I'm giving you $7.99, why do I have to watch ads?
Yep.
That's a problem. And also, interestingly enough, I will just toss this in as kind of an industry, you know, behind the scenes thing. When Mindy moved from Fox to Hulu, you know, they were asking the people who make the show, like, what's the big difference? And interestingly enough, it's the act breaks. You're going to go from 4 or 5 on Fox to 3 on Hulu. So they have to change the rhythm of the show changes because you're only having 3 act breaks. It's kind of interesting. And they were like, yeah, we kind of didn't know what to do because now we're used to like commercial goes here, but wait, we can do another 5 minutes or 7 minutes of material and then a commercial. So that's a little bit of a inside baseball. Oh. But I thought Hulu was interesting as a business entity. And was PBS here yet?
We did not cover PBS.
Okay, well, quickly on them. Very strong performances throughout. Again, I think if anybody's following me on Twitter from here, you saw me during the PBS session say, every time I look at it on paper and at TCM, I'm thinking that boring. And then I go to the sessions and I'm like, oh my God, this is fascinating. So there was a lot of those. 3 things that stood out that I'll point out were Norman Lear was wonderful. He was American Masters. When that comes out, you should watch it. American Experience is doing a documentary on Walt Disney, and the Disney company does not have editorial oversight, so it should be a warts and all portrayal of Mr. Disney. And then the one that's kind of hard to describe, so I won't go into too much detail other than to say watch it. There's going to be a series called American Epic that's going to feature Jack White, from the White Stripes, T-Bone Burnett, and Nas, and a whole bunch of other famous different musicians from different genres getting together to do this history of how American music got noticed. And it's too wonky to say what it's really about. It takes too long, but just keep your eye open if you're a music fan for American Epic. Mm-hmm. That's going to be very good.
Was Stephen Moffat kicking around for this, for Sherlock? Was that when he appeared? Cause I know that you said that you saw him, but I didn't think he was around for BBC America.
Yes, that was he was around for BBC America.
Oh, he was. Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. They can fly the producer around more easily than the actors, perhaps.
I think that is true of it.
But they'll make the writer do anything. He can literally send the writer.
Send the writer. He was in the hotel with his wife, Sue Virtue, who was wonderful. I think I mentioned either to you and certainly did on Twitter that I had drinks with both of them. I think when you sit down at the hotel and have drinks with Stephen Moffat, it's like, okay, now I know why I come down here. This is a super bright person. You know, he's doing Doctor Who, which of course you would have had a good time talking to me. And I have no idea.
Yeah.
But also Sherlock, talking about Sherlock was great. So yeah, he was here. Well,
and his wife's a producer, one of the producers, I think, on Sherlock, too, because she's got her own TV production company. So
oh, yeah.
It's in their family. This is what they do.
Yeah. Sue Virtue's a big deal. Yeah. So those are kind of a dynamic, too. And they are wonderful people, by the way. So that was nice for them to be here. Showtime just finished. This is actually a fresh start for them after PBS. Showtime just finished just the other day.
You wrote a piece about the worrying about the HBO Showtime quality gap, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, even though in the bigger picture they're competing against everybody, in my old school mind, it's like the old Showtime. I mean, because
the Dodgers.
Yes, yeah, the Giants Dodgers.
It's not a rivalry, a cord cutter
yet. So if you're not a cord cutter, sometimes you have to say, okay, I have $15 to $17 extra dollars a month, and what am I going to watch? Am I going to subscribe to Showtime or am I subscribed to HBO? And I just think the gap is very big between them, and I find it a little bit troubling because Masters of Sex, I think, has got itself into some trouble with its depiction of real people versus the fictional lives they led. The Affair is about to start its second season, and I have structural issues.
Right, four perspectives now instead of two.
Yes, four instead of two, and and then lastly, Billions is coming up, and Billions is the Damian Lewis and Maggie Siff and Paul Giamatti. It's got this amazing cast to it. It doesn't start until January, I think, but they paneled it. It's their like next big drama. But I got to tell you, I'm not rewriting a review of it just yet because they're going to give me, or all of us critics, another three or four episodes. But the pilot of it, it just feels like a CBS show. So I'm troubled by, I would say, you know, when you have these premium cable channels that you're paying for, I want something different. I don't want something I can see on network television. And I just felt as I watched that, hey, that's kind of a CBS show. So, but just a quick note about how social media and Twitter plays into covering this event. Sarah Treem, who is the creator and the writer of The Affair, knows that I had certain very, very strong issues structurally with how that season ended and how she manipulated, I think, viewers with her camera perspective. And I think that's a cheat dramatically. So she's been following me on Twitter and then sort of like in not a war with me, but just sort of like a war of words, like back and forth. And it continued actually right after her session. She was responding to tweets I was tweeting during the Affair session, but we're going to hash it out together on direct messages, I think.
You're going to work it out.
We'll work it out. And then sort of interestingly there, right as I was tweeting all the stuff about Showtime in the session the other day, their PR people kind of got around and said, okay, look, he looks like he's about to light us on fire as he compares us to HBO. So let's make sure we drag him downstairs quickly or ask him if he will come down and let us give our perspective before he files. So that was one of those things where you're in the room and you're tweeting and then on the other end of the receiving end, the Showtime people are like, fire, fire.
Damage control. Fire. What can we do?
Where is he? Make sure we get him before he gets out of the room. So there was that. And I sat down with David Nevins, who runs Showtime, and you know, heard his perspective, which I think was helpful. Obviously, it didn't change my overall impression of where they stand in regard to HBO, but it did help. I thought it was kind of a funny way of how Twitter works here.
Yeah, well, they'd be smart. It would be dumb for them not to be paying attention to that because you're getting the mood directly from the room instead of trying to read people's facial expressions. You actually can see a little bit into the brains of the critics who are sitting there. That's you would be committing malpractice, I think, if you didn't have people carefully eyeing what everybody was saying and mobilizing your troops, I suppose, or firing tranquilizers or something into the audience.
Yeah. It's just odd because all of us do it all the time from our homes or from our offices. And now it's like in a ballroom where they can get you and not like strong arm you, but like, hey, I just saw that. That was really mean.
Also, it reminds you that they're probably paying attention to everything you say.
Oh,
anyway,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've known that for some time, but that is a fresh reminder when they do that stuff. I can't remember, Jason, if the last time we talked, we had if Stars had come through.
I don't think so.
Okay, Stars is interesting because that is the third premium channel, basically, between HBO and Showtime. And sometimes it's sold in packages, so you may have Stars and not know it. And
yeah, I have it because of basically my HBO package came with Stars, so I have Stars.
They are a huge player, and they have been. Not all of their stuff has been up to snuff, but as you can tell, like some of their dramas from last year were very popular. Got a lot of ink. People are talking about them, and currently, if you're watching Ballers on HBO, what's about professional sports comedy. I think that Stars does probably a better job with their version, Survivor's Remorse, going into its second season. That's a very, very, very strongly put together series. But I think what they got some attention for. I don't think Blunt Talk is a very good series. Someone else is reviewing it for us, and I'm not sure whether he or she will like it or not. If it came out, I haven't seen it yet. But I think that they're going to definitely get some attention for Ash versus the Evil Dead, and they certainly got a lot of attention from me because not only was it a standout panel with Bruce Campbell, who's a total nut and totally hijacked the panel and was very funny, like it was like a watching a stand up routine, like a fast half hour or 40 minutes when he was there. But I had never seen any of the movies, but I'm definitely going to watch the combination of horror and humor that the Evil Dead stuff is built around.
Yeah, I saw the trailer. I guess they did a Comic-Con trailer release, and I'm not a big horror fan like you. And it's exactly what you expect, but so well done. And mixing in that totally insane sense of humor it really helps, I think, with the horror, because you kind of take it a little less seriously. Then it's like, yeah, we know there's blood and guts and stuff, but there's also jokes, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's a weird way of like having that, you know, being scared witless about something, and then at the same time thinking it's funny because, you know, Ash is going to save the day with his chainsaw and it'll be bloody everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that one, I think we, by the way, on the same day we saw Ash versus the Evil Dead, we saw Into the Badlands, and I was going, oh my God, if you put these two shows together, it's just be buckets of blood everywhere. Because it's a chainsaw in Ash versus the Evil Dead, and it's knives and spears and all kinds of martial arts cutting up in Into the Badlands, and there was like red wind. So those were the sort of standout series that we've come through. I of course there's billions of more sessions that I didn't talk about, but those were the kind of ones that stood out so far.
All right, and you say that the one you're most looking forward to of everything that you heard about is Fargo, is season 2 of Fargo.
Yeah, and once they did their panel here, you know, I think if season 1 is pretty flawless to me. I actually teach it in the college course that I teach, and based on what the panel was in the first hour, it looks like I might be able to teach season 1 and season 2 next spring because it's that strong.
Wow. So what do you do? I mean, you touched on a little bit. You are in sessions, taking notes and tweeting, and getting the ire of various TV executives while you do that. You're spending time out of sessions talking to people. Are you banking stuff away for later, or are you just sort of like keeping things in mind for? I'm wondering whether there's stuff that you're doing that you're like, I'm gonna save this for like 4 months from now, or whether it's all happening a little more presently. Like, you know, I'm really writing for now.
Yeah, we actually talked about this with some people from Warner Brothers Studios who were here, and they remembered the good old days of the tour when everybody would come, and it was, you know, it was basically a non-internet world back then. It certainly was not blogs that were not even a thing really, and what we did, everybody came, other reporters who were print-based came, and they, you know, you would file a story from here, and 2 days later it would end up in the Chronicle or the Examiner. That's even older, but like in the it would be in the Chronicle from here. And then you'd have, once blogs became popular, it really took over the room, and news just became so much quicker. And obviously now in the Twitter age, as soon as it comes out of somebody's mouth, it's breaking news. And right. And so the idea of actually storing a story is less of a thing. So I mean, traditionally people would come back from the tour and they'd have all these hundreds of transcripts, 100, 200 transcripts or whatever, how many we do. And they could go through these interviews with these actors and say, and put together a feature story very easily, and saying, "Oh, here's you know, here's Bruce Campbell from Ash and the Evil Dead, and how funny he was in this panel." And you can write a whole thing around it, put a picture in the paper, and you'd have it. I think some people will still do that. I don't think that their value is decreased by the fact that there's a more immediate world we live in. The immediacy doesn't cut the value of these things going forward. What I end up doing is I end up thinking more big picture, Jason, when I hear, you know, John Landgraf, and I've already done that column. People can see that on one of my TCA panels about, you know, I did a thing about how we're in the platinum age.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and along those lines, that idea came out. I mean, that was an urgent one because he was just here. But during many of these things, I'll hear a showrunner and one of the producers talk about something that in the panel is only an answer or two of 100 that are in that day, in that 30 minutes or 40 minutes of the panel. But the spark of an idea is there for a column, and I will invent I'll make a note that, like, oh yeah, I like this idea here and I want to investigate that. Or like you're in the Walt Disney panel and there's so much great stuff happening, and then somebody says something about, you know, how Walt Disney approached them about whether they could have editorial control, and you think, oh, this would be interesting to write about that concept later. So in that way, I bank those. But mostly what I'm doing is just what we talked about is, you know, I'm doing these TCA journals from here. I think I've done 7. I'll probably have like 8 or 9 before I leave. And I get so much valuable information when I actually sit down with executives, you know, offsite a lot of times, drinks or dinner or something. And also at these parties, you know, some people go to these parties and they end up interviewing the stars all day or just drinking. That's just kind of what we do to kick off some steam from being in the hotel for 16 nights so far, 18 for me. But as I've said to you numerous times in the past, as we talked about TCA, I love to get the executives after they've got a little drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Once they've had a couple of pops in them, their lips get a lot looser.
Yeah.
And if they're also... Some of that stuff is on the record, but a lot of times I think if I get them by myself, the idea is like, yeah, I will talk to you. This is on deep background, depending what executive I'm talking to. And I can get a lot of that. I mean, I can get a lot of value out of that. And I do like the inside baseball part of this. And I think people like to hear about it because a number of times I've talked to people, these executives who are unnamed and were sitting there having a drink. And I'm like, you know what? I can't believe you made this show, you know, and they'll say, oh, it's a shit show. It's like, it's just a disaster behind the scenes. The fact that we even got a pilot out to you guys is a miracle. And I'll tear my hair out if we get to the third episode. And it's like, okay, that show's probably done.
Yeah.
And that's valuable information to have because as a critic, I can look at that show and say, I don't think this is ever going to work. But to have the knowledge of the creator or the head of the network basically pissing all over it. Yeah, now I know it's not going to work.
Yeah, don't prioritize that one when it comes when the screeners come. It would also, I mean, this is similar to what I've done in technology stuff. It's, you know, you get those moments and then like 6 months later, a story comes up and you're like, oh, I have that perspective from that conversation I had 6 months ago. That makes this story much clearer to me. And you can't get that without having those conversations. Even if they don't, even if you're not writing a story about the actual conversation, you get that information and you file it away and it's just there for later.
Absolutely. And there are things just like, you know, we mentioned Ash and the Evil Dead. Would I have maybe farmed that out to somebody else to review because I'm not a big horror person? Probably, but now I'm going to do it myself. Mm. And then there are other times, and we didn't go through all of these shows, but there are times like I used the example of, you know, Grindr is a very that's a buzz show for Fox, and there's very little buzz shows for broadcast networks, unfortunately for them. And in fact, I have one of my first TCA journals from here was about broadcast networks not generating any buzz. There was I couldn't find any critics, and you know, I'm kind of a floater. I don't just hang out with one or two critics. I kind of move my way around the room. "Quote unquote," the room, and throughout these long days, I'm hanging around with disparate groups from around the country, and people are more online, or they're younger, or here's a more established paper, and they're older, or whatever. And I'm always asking, and we are always asking each other, talking about television. That's what we do when you're stuck in a hotel. And I just didn't pick up any buzz hardly at all for any of these broadcast shows. And so Grindr, this Rob Lowe series, is very funny. I think he's really good. And the panel was an exclamation point on how well that show could do conceivably. But more importantly, my point was they put Grandfathered right after it. Now, Grandfathered was not a buzz show. It was like, okay, that's kind of a cute comedy. But as far as the TCA panel and does this tour actually work for people? Does it work for networks? And did critics get anything out of it? Did networks or stars? Yes, I think the new life into that series, and I'm only using that as an example of one of many times this has happened, new life into Grandfather, because seeing them here, having a chance to talk to the writers and hear where they're going with the series, that's pretty invaluable information.
Great. I mean, you're investing a lot of time in this, so it's good that you get things out of it, right? Otherwise, yeah, why would you do this to yourself? So it makes a lot of sense. Do you want to? One of the other pieces that you wrote since we last talked was about John Stewart's last week. You want to talk about that before we wrap it up? I know that's a total shift in topic, but I was gone. I just watched it last night, so
yeah,
you know,
pretty amazing.
It was great. It was great. That was a pretty amazing week. Honestly, those last four shows, and then you know it was a classy, really great goodbye. I was struck by how it wasn't about him. Like, he tried very, very hard to make it about everybody he worked with and not him.
Yes, and I think just the Daily Show as an idea and Jon Stewart as a person sort of infused three different things that happened on this press tour. Very early here, one of my first columns from here, one of my first TCA journals, was about Trevor Noah and how you and I talked about this, how it won't matter his audience. This is our last podcast. We talked about that. So that was Daily Show related, of course. And then what you're talking about, the actual goodbye episode, I wrote in my room. A lot of us had to sort of skip the Fox party, the Fox and FX party, which for me, that's the one I want to go to because those are more of the shows that I'm interested in, executives I'm interested in talking to. But we hunkered down in the hotel in all of our different rooms. We watched the East Coast feed of his final night. And I think, you bet, and we'll see it. It was, I didn't realize how emotional it was going to be for me and how tied to that show for 16 years, I have been as a viewer, not just a critic, and how much I like him. And to witness also sort of the craft of it, I don't know a better way to put that. It was like, I was like, this was, and as I wrote in my review of it, this is a great way to go out. If you're going to go out, do it like this. It's none of these things can be perfect, because a lot of times in their attempt to be perfect, they are either not emotional enough, not spontaneous enough, or some other thing that doesn't work, or too maudlin. I felt like this was the right balance of a lot of these conflicting emotions. And to me, it was an emotional night. It was beautiful. It was a great way to go. But just as an example of how on this tour, you have a third angle. So Stephen Colbert comes in for CBS after, you know, he was obviously on Jon Stewart's farewell night. And one of my favorite things that I got from him was, or we all got from him as he talked, was him, Colbert, reiterating that Jon Stewart was a professional and he was really great. And the rule was, you know, Jon Stewart didn't want you to thank him. He didn't want you to say, oh, you know, hey, Jon, you've been such a good mentor, or I really liked how he didn't want to hear any compliments from anybody. He was just like, it's almost like the Larry David, no hugging, no learning kind of thing. He just didn't want emotions to come into it. So when he was here and for you and everybody else who saw the finale, what was beautiful about it was Colbert was saying, like, he goes, and he was not kidding. He said, I literally thought, and as he said on the finale, but he reiterated here in front of us, he said, I literally thought Jon Stewart was going to get up and walk off the set. He's that resistant to emotion and to having the cameras be on him. And as Stewart, I mean, as Colbert said, this story was really interesting. He's like, so I kind of tried to block him. And I was like, okay, if you're going to get off the stage, you're going to have to go through me, basically. He's like, I wanted to get to him like, okay, Jon, you can cut this out later, but I'm going to tell you this right now. And it was super emotional moment. That was when Stewart cried.
You can actually see it, that Stewart's rolling around on his chair like he's going to roll out of the set, and Colbert rolls the same direction to block him, to like keep him locked in, and says, "Stop rolling around. You're going to sit here and you're going to listen to this." That was, and also it comes after Stewart's throwing to commercial, and obviously there had been a conspiracy that they didn't tell him that they were not going to go to commercial, and that there was going to be that moment. And on the night before with Louis C.K., it was the same thing where they both agreed that don't be sappy. It's like I think he wants to deflect it, but also that he believes that his job is just to be a comedian, and not and that sappiness is self indulgent. But on the last night, somebody had to force it and say no, we need to make a little bit of this about you. And that Colbert segment was really, that was it. That was turning the tables.
Yeah, I loved it, and it's great to go back and watch it, and to know that that's not wasn't scripted. That when he was rolling that chair, he was going to leave, and Colbert was like, "Oh no, you don't." But they didn't say that out loud. But to me, the added benefit, and if people who followed some tweets and stuff here probably noticed already, but when they went to commercial after Colbert had managed to make Stewart cry on set, and they all the old Daily Show correspondents came rushing up on stage, and they got him, and they were jumping up and down where they had got him, and they were all jumping up and down together. What Colbert revealed here, which I found hilarious and touching, was that he goes, the mics didn't pick it up because they were cutting to commercials. Why they were jumping up and down, but all of the former correspondents who were in that scrum and jumping up, and Colbert, all of them were saying in unison, "Made him cry, made him cry," up and down. So it was great, and it was I don't know, one of those moments where you just think, okay, that this is why we do this. This is why we're here.
Yeah, and he was teared up for the rest of the night. But
rightly
so. I also felt like that was such a baton passing moment. That and the previous bit, which was John Oliver, that was that acknowledgement, like, hey, John Stewart's out of here, but these two guys, the one who's got the show and the other one who's about to come back with the show, like the spirit lives on, not just with Trevor Noah, getting a little cameo, which was a nice little nod there, but I don't know, it made me really excited about Colbert. Actually, that was one of those moments. I was like, all right, let's get Stephen Colbert back in here. I'm ready for that.
It was funny as they were all coming back out. I was like, oh, I wonder how, I obviously figured Colbert would be the last one. It was nice to have the second to the penultimate surprise correspondent being John Oliver. And this is such great success of all these people, and even Larry Wilmore and Trevor Noah coming up. It was so nice. That show really turned a lot of people into stars.
Yeah, I mean, when Wilmore appeared, my wife laughed out loud, and I said, well, it's not like he's going to have time for a show tonight. And then that was exactly the joke he made. I got bummed, John. Where else am I going to be? I'm like, we're going to run a little long.
But that was very funny.
Yeah, well, it's a big, I enjoyed it. I've been watching The Daily Show again for the last year or two. I'll miss it. It was, I was happy to get back into it just in time for John Stewart to hang it up. Thanks, John.
You're right. Exactly. Yeah. And, but now September 8th, you will see Colbert back on TV.
Yeah. After all, just an endless, that's what, 10 months off the air.
Yeah. He's ready to go.
When is Trevor Noah starting?
That's a good question. I think Noah starts after that.
All right. And what's interesting about it is, unlike David Letterman leaving and his whole team leaving, and Colbert bringing his crew from the Colbert Report largely to do the new show, a lot of the people at The Daily Show are staying. Essentially, Trevor Noah is kind of walking into a show that already has structure. And I think, is Jon Stewart even staying as a producer, listed as a producer on the Daily Show going forward? I mean, I think the goal is to give him some continuity. So it's not like they have to tear everything down and rebuild and need months and months to get ready for it.
Yeah, he's got the producers and the writers and the whole staff there. I think almost the entire staff. And so that's a seamless transition. And also, again, like you noticed that the whole Colbert writing staff went with him to CBS is great. So I think both of those shows will be in good hands, but we can revert back to that. One of my first ones about Colbert, Noah, and I don't think their audience is going to transfer. I think the real winner is going to be Colbert, and certainly John Oliver as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Noah's going to get all he's going to have every opportunity because they're giving him the safety net instead of building something from zero. But still, like you said, it's going to be a tough one, tough transition.
Yeah. And also, I think just a last note on Trevor Noah is we won't, you know, the first 2 months is not even going to be like, you can't say, oh, definitively he has a hit or definitively he kept the audience or he lost the audience. Yeah, you're not going to know that for a while, 6 months or more, I think.
Well, you remember when Letterman went to CBS. I mean, he was the leader for, what, 2-3 years? And then it just kind of drained away. And ultimately, mm-hmm. Leno went back on top. Took years, but it did happen. You know,
it did happen.
So we would just have to watch and see. But and I'll put a shout out the head writer of The Daily Show, Elliot Kalin, who is the co-host of one of my favorite podcasts, The Flophouse. It did leave The Daily Show, which sort of surprised me. But one of the other hosts of that podcast is a writer of The Daily Show and is staying. And most of the staff is my understanding. But Kalin had been there about 15 years, too, or 12 years. So I think I like Jon Stewart. He was like, yeah, that's a long time to be in a job. So
yeah,
he moved along. But they got a lot of other people there. So. Well, what else? What's left for you? What's left? What are the poor networks that have to deal with tired TV critics the next couple of days?
Well, beautifully, this is pretty much a wrap. I mean, it was the NBC, or actually, was it Universal Cable, and they do a lot of shows that are not just on. They're all over.
I hear the Sci-Fi Channel has gone back to Sci-Fi and is adapting Sci-Fi novels now.
Yes, they have. They've done a number of them, and Children's End.
Was it Childhood's End? Is that the Arthur
Childhood's
C. Clarke?
Childhood's End, yes, sorry, yeah. And that looked pretty good. I don't know whether
I think
I'm
George R.R. Martin has made a lot of money for a lot of people who own the rights to books,
yes.
I suspect.
Yes, and I like that they're doing that. So Sci-Fi they've heard the clarion call of, hey, why don't you do some sci-fi?
On the Sci-Fi Channel.
So they're doing that again. And it's these NBC Universal cable channels that are here. So kind of a spotty day. It was early stuff in the morning and the early afternoon was there. Later in the afternoon, nothing much. But beautifully, the tour ends on Thursday. The tour ends wonderfully with NBC, which it's just going to be a lot of people have left already. You know, NBC has for years tried to – the people who are they will go unnamed inside NBC have tried to kill the press tour for a number of years. And before this person was unceremoniously dumped from NBC, so it wasn't Robert Greenblatt, even though he does not like the critics. So that should be also a very troubling aspect tomorrow for him and his network, since he has like one show on NBC getting buzzed. Everything else looks like, oh my God, really? And so anyway, this person who no longer is there had told the TCA, listen, we want to go last. We want to get as close to the start of the television season as we can. If we go early,
Brilliant.
We get lost. Right. We want to go at the end. And so now the new regime is like, how the hell did we get at the end? They're like, this is a disaster. You guys are tired and you're cranky and you hate us. Why would we go last? And like, look, you asked for it. You got it.
Wow. Well, I guess we'll talk about whatever the heck NBC is talking about next time.
Yeah, probably not a lot. There is one show, but probably not a lot of stuff. We won't need to spend much time on
NBC. What's the one show that's buzzing on NBC?
I'll tell you, it's called Blind Spot, and I'm happy that I finally remembered that, because the show, I keep thinking it should be called Tattoo or Inked or something. It's the one show that I think I haven't reviewed the pilot yet, but if you want to see a trailer, you can Google Blind Spot from NBC and watch it. It's very creative thing. It's basically, in a nutshell, it's a woman comes out of a bag, fully, completely naked, fully tattooed, and the idea is she wasn't that way a couple of days ago when she went missing, and now she has her memory wiped. She's covered from head to toe in tattoos, which are clues about something that the FBI needs to decode. And rather than just like looking at her body for clues to what whoever this person or group or country who kidnapped her and tattooed her, whatever they want, whatever strange messages they're sending us, is not just read it off, or they find, for example, that a little bit like the Bourne Identity, she starts to remember elements of things she didn't know she could do, like speak Chinese and also like kind of be like a black op level karate expert. So these things pop out. It looks very fun and very entertaining.
All right. See, NBC, you got something.
You got one thing.
Yeah.
See ya. See you tomorrow on the last day when we're all cranky.
Well, you know, ABC, all they got are Muppets. So, you know.
Yeah, Muppets. Exactly.
I got a question for the puppet.
In the back.
Excuse me, sir. That's racist. We're Muppets. Oh, well, I feel like I hope this has been a little respite and not flashback inducing of having to recap your last week and a half.
Oh, it was flashback inducing.
Yes. Just have some more candy, some more Diet Coke.
Yes, I must live on candy and Diet Coke and then later wine.
And then, yes, later wine. That's good. That's wise. Well, so we will check in again next week after you've had some time to recover, I think. Does that sound good?
That's a very good idea.
All right. Thanks to everybody out there for being patient and the fact that we missed last week. I'm going to take the blame for that, but we'll be back next week. And we got this one to you a little bit earlier this week, released simultaneously worldwide, as they do on Netflix. We do it, too, here at the TV Talk Machine. All right. Thanks, everybody. Tim's Bastard Machine at Twitter. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Facebook.com/TV Talk Machine if you want to leave us comments, or you can email us a podcast at TVTalkMachine.com. We'll see you next week. Tim, thank you so much for taking the time out of the death march.
You bet.